Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 29th day of July 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County, Illinois. The folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana, will discuss the cash grain market with us. We'll take up the weather forecast with Drew Lerner, hear all about the running ranchers from Montana and their beef advocacy, and we'll take a look at a new plan for conservation and water quality in the state of Illinois as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for Wednesday afternoon. In the corn pit, losses moved sharply for the day, down 7 1/4 at $3.67 3/4 in the September contract. December down 7 1/4 as well at $3.78 1/4. The March at $3.89 7 1/2 lower. May down 7. July down 7. September down 5. Next year's December also down a nickel. It finished at $3.92 3/4. August soybeans up 8 1/4 today at $9.83. September at $9.57 up 3, and in a unique experience, the settlement is split. The rest of the contracts are lower. November contract in the beans at $9.43 1/4, down 1 1/2 cents. January down 2 at $9.48 3/4, and the March at $9.47 1/4, 2 1/4 lower. May down 1 1/2 cents. July down 1 1/4 cents. November of next year, 2 1/2 cents lower. Bean meal futures in Chicago up $4.80. The bean oil 45 cents lower. Chicago's soft red winter wheat a loss of 14 1/2 cents. $4.96 1/4. The settlement price December down 15, and July of next year down 13 3/4. The hard red September down 9 1/2 cents for the day. Live cattle futures in Chicago were 17 1/2 lower at the finish. Actually, their last trade, 144.87 1/2 in the August contract. August feeders at 211.47 1/2 now up 22 1/2 cents. And lean hogs for the day are 42 1/2 cents higher. They're trading at $79.90 per 100 pounds. Some of the outside markets show us ethanol 0.3 cents higher at $1.48, and crude oil up 72 cents at $48.70 a barrel. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Gasoline prices now. On the RBOB, this is the wholesale price. They're at $1.82 4 cents today. That's 2 1/10 cents higher than it was yesterday. Diesel fuel, otherwise known as heating oil, at $1.59 8 cents. That's down 0.6 cents. And natural gas on the day at $2.88 2 cents, up 0.6 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is trading 144 points higher at 17,690. The U.S. dollar at 97.08. That's up 0.212. And gold futures on this afternoon are trading at $1,094. They're down $2.20. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. A 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms before 4 p.m. Mostly sunny, a high of 86 degrees. Northwest winds at about 10 miles an hour. The gust all the way to 18 today. Tonight, clear with a low of 63. Northwest winds at 6 to 8. And then sunny skies tomorrow. And a high of 86 on a north wind at 5 to 8 miles an hour. Thursday night, mostly clear, a low of 64. Friday, sunny and 87. Winds will stay out of the north on Friday at 6 miles an hour. Friday evening, mostly clear at 64 degrees. And Saturday, sunny skies and 83 degrees. By the time we get to Saturday night, it'll be clear with a 63 degree low. And for the start of the week on Sunday, a chance of showers, some thunderstorms, mostly sunny, a high of 83. Partly cloudy Sunday night with a low of 65. The work week looks like this. Monday, showers. Monday night, showers. Tuesday, showers and thunderstorms. 85 degrees on Monday with a high, with sunny skies for the most part. And clear, or partly cloudy on Monday evening, and 65. And on Tuesday, mostly sunny again, although there are that chance of showers and thunderstorms with a high of 82 degrees. Drew Lerner will be here at the bottom of the half hour to take a more complete look.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's Wednesday afternoon, the 29th day of July. On the line with us today is Jackie Vake. She's at Stewart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Jackie, thanks so much for taking the time with us today. China's still on top of the list of things you want to discuss. We did that pretty in-depth this morning. I suppose it all centers on their GDP, or their gross domestic product.
Well, there's no question. I mean, you know, it's remained at 7%, which is still a great deal better than what we're looking at. But, you know, if you roll back to 2007, it was 14.2%. So I think what it really comes down to is, you know, we have a new premier over there. And, you know, he said he had an explicit plan for the economy to reform it. It appears that he's becoming more impulsive all the time. And so they're making these big swings, which I think is making investors nervous. I highlighted it primarily, Todd, because I think we have to think about something. How do you restore the number two economy, you know, when the number one economy is going to look at rate hikes? You know, those two don't go together. And so it's going to be a, you know, we're going to be walking on some fiery coals for a while until we find out exactly where we're at. You know, the Fed came out today. It looks like they're staying the course, at least for the moment, but their next scheduled meeting is until September. And so the minute that Janet Yellen came out and talked, the dollar and the crude both took a big bounce. There had been profit taking in those markets prior to the Fed minutes. And I think another interesting thing in our economy is U.S. home ownership is at the lowest it's been since 1967. And they say it's primarily because college debt is so big that a lot of these people just don't want to take a chance on trying to buy a home. And beyond that, the next interesting point is the highest time of home ownership was in 2004. And so, you know, some people would say, oh, 2008 prior to the fall, but that's not the case. And so we still see, you know, rental rates going up and very large, very low occupancy levels. I mean, the occupancy levels are very high, very low availability of apartments. So quite a switch in the U.S.
Hey, let's go directly to the grains and the oil seeds. What was happening in the wheat market today? They took the heaviest losses down 14, 15 cents. And the soft red, hard red was down 9 or 10 cents for the day. I guess they're finding, yeah. And neither of those would be related to the spring wheat tour, which would be up. That'd be up to the northwest corner, but I guess they're finding pretty good stuff there.
Well, they are. This, you know, they had the best first day in 21 years on the spring wheat tour. North Dakota being something that I thought stood out very big, and that was they estimated the spring wheat in North Dakota at 51.5 bushel to the acre. That's versus their normal of 43.6. And in contrast to winter wheat, when you look at winter wheat in the West, usually if you have a really good winter wheat crop, you are not going to have as good a corn crop or bean crop because they more or less need opposite types of weather conditions. When you look at spring wheat, now that's an entirely different story. And so I think what you saw today was you saw some investors and some traders saying, holy smokes, this could be a precursor to an even bigger corn and bean crop up there than what we might be thinking of. You know, perception's the name of the game is what it is. And I believe that, you know, that bled over, of course, into the corn. Corn had a miserable close. They closed below the monthly trend line of 381.5. November beans, basically, you know, they came in and they only closed down a penny and a half. But unfortunately, you know, they've got some really strong overhead resistance at 952.5 and 955. And, you know, the next big deal would be the contract low of 896.75. Everything else in between is going to be psychological. And so not a great day at the market. And I think that it primarily relates to the spring wheat tour.
Well, we'll see more. I guess they'll continue on and we'll find out more about what that spring wheat looks like. Although we've been talking about the Minnesota crop for a while. The perception would be if that thing gets bigger, it would be difficult, I would think, for them to have better conditions going at this time. But we'll find out, I suppose, won't we?
Well, yes. I mean, I talked with some of our Minnesota guys, Nebraska guys, North Dakota guys, and all of them since the weekend have had anywhere from 1 to 1.5 inches of rain, with an inch of rain last week. And if you talk, Kansas even had over an inch of rain. You just don't hear of that at this particular time of the year. So that, you know, they're jumping up and down for joy, while our guys are really, you know, in Illinois and Indiana, Ohio are feeling bad in some areas. And so their crop just keeps getting bigger. We don't know what our crop is doing.
It does show the disparity between the East and the West, and the good and the bad from one side of the Corn Belt to the other. Anything that livestock producers, I'm wondering in particular, as we move these prices lower, should be considering. Do they need to lock in any feed needs for the end of the third or the beginning of the fourth quarter?
Oh, I think they should definitely be looking for, I've been buying out-of-the-money calls this week, primarily with the idea that I don't think our lows are going to be as low as they were before. You know, we were looking for 350. We may be now looking at 360. 362.5 is the old contract low. So could we go there again? Yes. If we go there again, boy, I tell you, lock in. You know, get your either feed needs locked in or get as many calls on the books as you can, because I think just in general, there's a lot we don't know about the crop yet at this point in time. We've got some good news in the livestock market, Todd. You know, on one side, Asia's taking a lot more pork, which is going to help us clean up some of the excess pork we're going to have due to expansion. They're featuring, in the United States, they're featuring pork belly corn dogs. Okay, I don't know if you've had one of those yet, but, bacon corn dog sounds pretty good, and pulled pork mac and cheese, you know, and so those are all good news, and they all say that they're coming because there's been more production and the prices have dropped. On the other side, when you look at live cattle, our exports from Australia have come, are up 70% this year, and, we're now the largest export market for Australia. And so that is concerning. And I think, you know, you're seeing a reflection of that, of course, in the livestock market itself, because we've taken some of the shine off of it this last week. Although I still contend that the funds are very, very active in that market. When you looked at Monday, the funds sold 30,000 corn, then they bought some. Now, you know, it's all over the place.
Sure.
And so until we get that far, you just really don't know what's going to happen.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
You bet. Thanks, Todd. Have a good one.
You too. That, of course, Jackie Vakes. It's Stuart Peterson here on the Closing Market Report for Wednesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. This is willag.org. Find us online at where? WILLAG.org. Here's a fun little story I thought you'd like to hear. It comes from Lane Norland at the Northern Ag Network. That's out in Montana. He says, in the world of running and fitness, it may be a little odd to see a person wearing a cowboy hat and a shirt that has a picture of a beefsteak on it. But for several years now, the Montana running ranchers have been using competitive running events to advocate for beef as part of a healthy diet and lifestyle. Ryan Goodman's one of the running ranchers and says they just got back from a 200-mile relay race.
Earlier in July, we went to the northwest coast of Washington for the Ragnar Relay Northwest Passage, and it's a 200-mile relay, and it took us 27 hours to compete with about 500 and some odd teams. It was a pretty neat opportunity to run along the coast there from near the Canadian border to just north of Seattle. And a pretty neat experience. Had a lot of questions from folks asking about Montana ranching and asking about beef, and definitely good advocacy opportunity.
Goodman thinks the Team Beef program's a great way for ranchers to share their experience and as beef ambassadors in a very non-traditional way, too.
The Team Beef program is pretty neat and a great opportunity to connect the ranchers and the ranching community with people who are interested in health and fitness. And as we're engaging in opportunity to take part in these runs, not only in big runs like these Ragnar relays that we take part in outside of the state, but runs across the state, we're able to engage with folks who have those mutual interests and answer questions and promote beef as part of a healthy lifestyle and a healthy diet. And a lot of the times we get questions about, is beef really that healthy for us as part of a training diet, or get questions about ranching practices. And so it's a great opportunity to reach out to folks who are outside of our circles and who may not normally encounter people from the ranching community and connect on those mutual interests.
Now, if you'd like to learn a little bit more about Montana's running ranchers, you can see the Montana Beef Team at montanasbeefcouncil.org website. Okay, so now I'm going to be a little personal here, because some people will be thinking, hey, wait a second, beef, it's really healthy, and they'll be wondering about that. I'll insert something personal here. A couple of years ago, I decided I'd simply gotten too heavy, and I lost about 36 pounds. Part of that weight loss program was that I ate beef, because my wife and I eat out a lot, and what I found that is if I ate a steak when I was out, and I ate the small one, the 6-ouncer, not the 9, 10, 12-ounce steak, I could keep the whole meal under 500 calories or thereabouts. That included the baked potato and, well, usually a really nice vegetable. And I eat more beef today than I ever have in my life, and it really feels good. It's about moderation, frankly, as much as anything, but for me that moderation meant that when I was looking at the menu items and counting calories, beef came up at those small portion sizes as one of the best things I could choose. And today, I'm still 36 pounds lighter than I was when I started the process. Oh man, I hope that doesn't jinx the whole process and I begin to gain weight. It'll be a problem. All right, let's move on to something else. You know, after a couple of years of planning, the state of Illinois, along with the University of Illinois, has a proposal for reducing water pollution. It follows other Mississippi River watershed states in trying to get farmers to voluntarily implement conservation measures instead of creating legislation that requires them to do so. Abby Wendell talked about the plan with Marcia Willett. She's the chief of the Bureau of Water for the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency.
What are some of the voluntary actions that farmers could take in order to reduce runoff?
They're not unknown practices. They're really pretty well-known practices. Cover crops. Cover crops hold the nitrogen in the field. They can make the soil healthy so you don't have as much erosion. So it can be very effective for reducing losses of both nitrogen and phosphorus, making sure that you're only applying enough nitrogen that the crop can take it up, having what they call conservation tillage so you're not just stripping the land bare, having filter strips between your agricultural field and the nearby creek. So there's a pretty good menu of options for farmers to choose from. We just need them to choose them and implement them.
The hypoxic zone in the Gulf is going to be, I think, as big as Connecticut, which is consistent with the historical average. So even as some of the states in the Mississippi River Basin have been adopting some of these voluntary strategies, there doesn't seem to be any impact on the dead zone in the Gulf. And so Illinois is adopting yet another strategy that is similar to these other strategies that don't appear to be working.
Well, the strategy development is one thing. I think the key is not that we've got our strategy documents completed, but that that there is implementation of those strategic actions going on a very large scale, because that's really what it's going to take in order to show an impact.
So getting folks to do it.
Right.
Why not put into law something that requires people to clean up their act?
Well, there are some who would argue that that is needed. I think the agricultural community has taken the fact that our strategy for them is voluntary incentive-based to heart, in saying that here is our opportunity to make sure that we can make progress even with voluntary action.
There's goodwill, right? There's farmers who say, I need to do this in order to prevent fish die-offs in the Gulf. But then there's also just some like basic economics that go into play with adopting a system that incorporates something like cover crops. So these voluntary measures are things that potentially could cost farmers money in order to do. And when you have grain prices that are not doing very well and weather that's not doing great either, without any regulation, there's also no like economic incentives to get farmers to adopt some of those voluntary measures, or am I just not seeing that?
Well, there are some practices that actually provide an economic benefit to the farmer. And cover crops can be that. There is a cost, but there has been some data that show a yield increase, makes them more resilient to drought, other types of benefits to the farm operation. There are others that really would just be effective, but not as popular because they don't provide a benefit. So that is a challenge if, in fact, we don't get the implementation levels that are expected, then I think people will have to come back together and decide, so what do we do about that?
I've been doing a little bit of reading on the Chesapeake Bay watershed. Mm-hmm. Just by comparison, the Chesapeake seems to be going in the more regulatory approach. And, I mean, is that something that could be down the pike for Illinois and the other states that are in the Mississippi watershed?
Well, I guess it could. There are some differences. Chesapeake Bay was far enough along in their study of the issue from a watershed basis that they had a model that said, here's exactly how much nitrogen is coming from each of these farms, and we're going to plug this into a load reduction model to apportion this throughout, you know, for municipalities, for farms and everything like that. And there was an executive order issued by the federal government, by the president, that said, and you have to put in place these types of requirements to make sure that this gets done. So that's what would need to happen probably in the Mississippi River Basin before we'd be looking at a regulatory approach. I guess it's possible, but it doesn't feel like it's pending at this particular moment. I think that most of the states are working with their agricultural community, as Illinois is, to press on the voluntary action piece.
Marcia Willett is the chief of the Bureau of Water for the Illinois EPA. She spoke with Abby Wendell, whose reporting is produced in partnership with Harvest Public Media. More information at harvestpublicmedia.org. Stephen Linneberg now joins us. He's with the Andersons Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana. Production problems abound in your area, Stephen. I suspect that's making a difference in basis and prices and cash grain and the marketplace for both corn and soybeans in your area.
I mean, generally speaking, what we see in our back porch, and then, I mean, for the state of Indiana as a whole, based off of what the fields look like, they're going to produce new crop. Anybody who's continuing to sit on any old corn, old beans, they continue to sit on just from the standpoint it feels like we could store new corn or over top old corn. We'll have plenty of bid space. Bean-wise, basis, you know, continues to ask the farmer to hold because they've saw basis improve, and this thing is as strong as we've seen it in the last 90 days for sure. Consequently, the futures market isn't helping to make an attractive cash sale, so basis continues to climb to find sellers.
I suspect that means your bases are overs?
Oh, I mean, yeah, from a width of standpoint on the bean side, I mean, we're watching basis climb 10 to 15 cents a day just this week, and a lot of processors are starting to look at the November bidding with a 40-cent spread. I mean, $1.10 to $1.20 over the November is trading for old beans today. And that's a huge concern for us as well as the farmer, based off of where we feel new crop production is going to be. Spread on corn basis, not quite as wide, but we've definitely watched small unders, you know, creep to double-digit overs here in the matter of 72 hours. So the search is on for corn and old soybeans, and it continues to remain a struggle as now farmers are a little reluctant to sell, and we understand as to why.
Do you think that the trade has overdone the downside on this, and despite the fact that there's a good crop out west, that things may need to move higher?
It sure feels that way, Todd. It does. I mean, it feels like you look at charts, and it definitely feels that we may have another 10 to 15 cents on the bottom side to test. But ultimately, I think 99.9% of the folks out there are expecting some point of rebound, something we may not see until the harvest is in full swing.
And what are your bids for the day, Stephen?
Cash corn come across at 378. Cash beans are 994.
Stephen Linneber is with the Andersons Climbers Facility out of Logansport, Indiana. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 29th day of July. We're joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather forecast in the Midwest. I'm surprised, I guess, a bit by the heavier rainfalls that we've had in the last 24 hours. I don't know that I was really expecting them, but they popped up nonetheless.
Absolutely, they did. And I think this is indicative of the state that our environment is in right now. The atmosphere is still plenty moist, and we're still getting a lot of feedback moisture from the soil and parts of the region. And what's happening here is that we still don't have any well-organized high-pressure ridge aloft, which is something we usually have in the summertime. But so far, the atmosphere is still all excited and a very active jet stream. So a lot of small disturbances are pushing through the Midwest. We're still getting a few pools of cool air aloft, and all that comes together and helps to generate some significant thunderstorms. And at this time of the year, there's a little bit of a slowdown normally in the jet stream, and we haven't really seen that. But some of these thunderstorms here recently have shown at least some slowing in their movement, and that's also helped to contribute to some of the rainfall. We've really got to do something about drying out the atmosphere just a little bit here so that we can slow down some of these intense thunderstorms and reduce the number of occurrences. But with that said, you got to be careful what you ask for, because sometimes we end up with too much dryness around at this time of the year. And really, I think as long as our temperatures stay up in the 80s and even some 90s, I think we will probably get along fairly well at this point. We've removed a lot of the surplus moisture from quite a few areas, and as long as we don't see the same area beat up over and over and over again, I think most of the heavy rains will disappear fairly quickly and the crops will continue to develop favorably. But we do have those pockets out there that are just really having a hard time drying down.
Going forward over the next 7 to 10 days, what do you see?
Well, I think we're going to see more of the same, actually. The pattern doesn't change much. There's some suggestion in some of the models that we'll get a little more ridge building to occur out in the plains. But all that's going to do is spin off a lot of little disturbances over the top of the ridge and right through the heart of the Midwest. So we should anticipate a round of showers and thunderstorms every 2 or 3 days across parts of the region. And once again, there will be some heavy thunderstorms embedded in there. The most likely area that we'll see the highest frequency of rains that are intense will probably be the very same areas where it hit last night, portions of Iowa, maybe some areas in northwestern and west central Illinois and neighboring areas of both Minnesota and Wisconsin. That doesn't mean they're just going to get hit one day right after the other, but I do think that they will see a lot higher frequency than Ohio or Indiana will. Those areas will see a lot less frequency in the rain and probably less intensity as well.
The geographic range on these storms is smaller than those earlier in the year, which stretched from Missouri through Ohio then.
Absolutely. It'll be much more, much smaller areas that are impacted each time around. So it will not be the same kind of result. Plus, our temperatures, again, are warmer than they were back then. And we should see much quicker drying after the storms pass.
Thanks so much for taking the time with us today. We'll talk with you again next week. And, well, of course, on the opening market report tomorrow morning.
You bet. Have a good day.
That, of course, is Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Todd Gleason.